Are you open to fresh ideas that could increase your billings by 200 to 300% in the next 12 months? Then join me and my team in London this September for an unforgettable event. You'll learn our proven framework for building a 7+ figure recruitment business that you love. You'll also discover advanced strategies and exclusive insights that are not available anywhere else. Plus, you'll leave with a personalized step-by-step roadmap for getting from where you are now to where you'd ideally like to be. We have a beautiful venue in Leicester Square with a panoramic view of the London skyline. Listen, the only downside of this room is that the space is very limited. And that's because this isn't an event where we're selling lots of tickets. This is going to be an exclusive and intimate event for serious entrepreneurs. To avoid being disappointed, reserve your space today at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Have you registered for the Recruitment Coach Live Summit yet? Here's reason number 3 why this will be the best investment you make in your business in 2025. You'll discover the latest trends. Listen, the recruitment industry is literally changing before our very eyes. What worked 2 years ago or even last year could already be outdated information. If you want to stay current in terms of the technology, the adoption of AI and automation, and the tactics and strategies that are actually working right now in today's marketplace, then you need to get yourself to London on September 17th or 18th. Do not get left behind. Register now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
Can AI recruit better than the human today? 100%. Better than humans on average. I really believe that. Is that the future we want? And that will that be the case? That's a different question.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And today we're joined by Johnny Campbell.
You remember the 08 recession was around the same time that the social media sites began to become a thing. Like Facebook only left the universities in 07. So I just furiously worked to figure out how can I use this internet and social media thing to find talent. And we managed to teach ourselves how to X-ray search, source, use social networks to find talent and started filling these jobs, Mark.
Johnny's the co-founder and CEO of Social Talent, a SaaS platform that helps organizations build better workplaces by making them excellent at hiring.
This is, I think, the most transformational time in recruiting that I've ever seen. I'll go out on a limb and say, I think we reached peak recruiter back in 2023. I think within 2, 4, 6, 8 years, there will be half the amount of recruiters working in the world as there are today.
With over 250,000 followers on LinkedIn, Johnny's recognized globally as a thought leader on talent strategy, hiring enablement, and the intersection of AI and recruitment.
There are people say people want humans in the hiring process. They do, but not in every part of it. They want them in critical moments. I think the challenge of the modern recruiting team or recruitment services team is to figure out where to put the humans. And when you put the humans, let's accentuate that. Let's make that an unbelievably brilliant stage or step in the process. We can only do that by stripping out the humans in the other parts.
He's a keynote speaker. He's also a fellow podcast host. He's a coach to some of the world's top TA teams and recruiters. He's also the father of 4 boys, an avid runner, and an aspiring youth rugby coach. Johnny, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Mark, it's an absolute pleasure and an honor to be here on the show. Thanks for having me.
I feel like I'm talking to a recruiting celebrity.
My wife thinks that's a crazy idea. A celebrity recruiting. And she laughs and scoffs at this thing. So I'm glad you at least appreciate that our industry is maybe worthy of people who are celebrities. Many
are. Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you can't be a celebrity in your own house. That's never going to fly, is it?
No.
I have 3 kids, so daughter and 2 boys. If actually my 15-year-old son plays rugby, what age group do you coach?
So all 4 boys play rugby. My 16-year-old, he's second row. And then I have 2 10-year-olds. I coach the 10-year-olds. They're moving into under 12s. And then a 6-year-old. So we weave everything, all levels of the game. And I know that the game is different. Let's say in the UK and Ireland, we have slightly different rules. We play visiting teams sometimes. But listen, it's fun. When I say I'm their rugby coach, my co-coach is formerly cap player for South Africa.
Oh, wow. So
I do what he says and I run the WhatsApp group, Mark. That's what really happens.
Fantastic. Well, it's a great game. And South Africa and Ireland I can't think of any 2 countries that take rugby more seriously than those two. So that's...
Well, let's not forget our Kiwi cousins who will be straight in there
fighting
for that.
Well, that's true. That's true. Absolutely. So listen, primarily today, I want to talk about the impact of AI adoption in hiring and what that means for recruiters and the skills that we need for the future. But I'd love to just hear the short version of your, how did you get into the recruitment industry?
Oh, well, I got into the recruiting industry like most people, I think of our generation did, Mark. I was in university. I was trying to find a job, any job. I kind of didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I did a commerce degree, a business degree, a nice generic, well, let's wait and see what happens degree. And I was interviewing for tons of different jobs, insurance jobs, sales jobs, you name it. And I turned up at a staffing agency one morning and they're sitting with me and it's the old fashioned, you sit at the side of someone's desk in the office and they interview in 10 minutes. And they said, can I come back? And they brought their manager and the manager sat me down and said, we think you should do recruiting. And so I said, okay. So then I actually didn't take that job. I applied for a couple of recruiting jobs thinking, sure, recruiting, whatever. And from there, I ended up getting offered a recruiting job after six interviews a week before my 21st birthday. And I've worked in the industry ever since.
Wow. So that's a long time then. Not saying you're old, but... you've been doing this a while. So,
I have.
Didn't you also run your own recruitment agency before starting Social Talent?
I did, yeah. So I worked in agencies in Ireland from 98 for, 8 years, got poached to run a recruitment business in the Caribbean and the Cayman Islands. Did that for a couple of years. Of course, at that point, I was doing it 10 years. I was 30, 31, thinking I know everything there is to know about everything. And thought, well, it's about time I set up my own recruitment business. And that was July 08. So by September, we had our first child was born at Bear Stearns and all the banks had fallen. The world was in chaos. It was a recession. Nobody was using agencies and we were struggling to survive.
What happened next? Because I started my business in 2001 and was doing well. And then 2008, similar. I already had two kids at that stage and number three was on the way. And that was a scary time, but you'd only just started. How did you survive that?
We survived by doing whatever we could. In the very short term, you know, we had a client in Ireland who had just opened a new business and we're building out a call center. And we called him up and said, hey, how are you getting on hiring? He said, well, I'm using all these agencies. We said, what are you paying them? And he said, this fee, that fee. We said, okay. What if we can get everyone down to 15%? Can we have the difference? And we'll manage all your recruiting function for this high volume and do all your screening and do your interviewing. He's sure, if it costs me nothing, go for it. And that kept us going, literally the first few months. And after that, we've begun to go back to some of our other clients. And they didn't have a whole lot of work to give us. And they were largely financial services firms in the Caribbean. And they would come to us with really, really niche roles and say, if you could find someone for that, we'd pay you a fee. And these are roles I'd never recruited for. I was an accountancy recruiter. And these were like actuarial reserving experts or catastrophe insurance folks. And I'm like, oh my God. And I was, how do I find people? I don't have a database of people. But it was about the time because if you remember the 08 recession was around the same time that the social media sites begun to become a thing. Like Facebook only left the universities in 07. So I just furiously work to figure out how can I use this internet and social media thing to find talent. And we managed to teach ourselves how to x-ray search, source, use social networks to find talent and started filling these jobs, Mark. And it was kind of, it's the genesis really of Social Talent because a year later, I found myself teaching more people how to do what I was doing than actually filling jobs. And myself and my business partner at the time, Vince, he said, okay, either we're going to be the only agency in the world using these techniques, which is unlikely, or we can be the company who teaches everybody else how to do it. And that's essentially how Social Talent was born.
That's cool. So I understand you've trained over a million recruiters at this stage, which is crazy to even think there's a million people doing what we do, right? So let's fast forward to today then, and because we're at a very interesting moment in the recruiting industry. I don't know what your pulse of reading of the market is, but I feel like I'm getting from recruiters I speak to a lot of uncertainty, certain amount of excitement about the possibility of AI and people kind of in the early stages of leveraging things, but also like there's both upsides and downsides to this. When you look at AI's rapid adoption in hiring, what recruiter skills do you see as being as quickly losing value, and which ones just became priceless?
So if you think about, first of all, you know, this is, I think, the most transformational time in recruiting that I've ever seen, right? So 25 plus years, I'll go out on a limb and say, I think we reached peak recruiter back in 2023. I think within 2, 4, 6, 8 years, there will be half the amount of recruiters working in the world as there are today. Half, or at least, sorry, as there was in 2023. So that's an unbelievable shift. And I've written about this a bit, Mark. And certainly when I started talking about this in January, pardon me, let's say of last year, you know, people called me an idiot. Increasingly, it sounds less idiotic. It's more down to the details of exactly what are people going to be doing, not going to be doing, to your point, to the question. So I think peak recruiters, you know, come and gone. We're in the decline. The decline won't all happen all at once. It won't be a date in 4 years where 50% of recruiters stop working. It's going to be some companies continuing as is for a long time. Some have already changed. And you see a lot in the tech space doing this. But at a high level of it, like if you think about recruiting as how do we attract and find candidates is the first part of the problem. Second part of the problem is how do we basically assess them for our roles? And the third is get them to accept an offer, right? So let's say, you can break it down into many steps. Let's just say there's three big steps there, Mark. The first two, in fact, all of them are heavily human-oriented and have been for a long time. Those first two, they're going to be automated, largely. And particularly that middle part, I'll take the middle part, for example, that assessment piece. The way we do it at the moment is we interview people in a call, or in person, and we might get 4 or 5 people to do that over 7, 8 interviews over hours and weeks. And we use disparate questions, we change it every time, bias comes into it. At the end of it, we hope to God, we predicted that we find someone who's good for the job, right? And it was said to me recently in an analogy, imagine going for a financial loan in 2025, where you have to walk into the local bank, they sit you down, they ask you about yourself, your aspirations, what do you do, your experience. They ask you some dumb questions in there as well that seem not relevant to getting a bank loan. Halfway through it, they say, let me go find 4 of our tellers. And they bring them over and say, we'd like to meet these 4 tellers. They want to ask a few questions and to see, you know, if we get the good vibe from you. And then 6 weeks later, they tell you if you've got a loan. Like, that's not how you get a loan. Like you go online and in 60 seconds, you've got pre-approval, right? Or you're declined. Because in financial services, where arguably they manage the most amount of risk, more risk than hiring employees, we trust technology to do this better than humans. So we're seeing it finally in recruiting that the humans are coming in for those parts. But if you think about it,
Johnny, can I just interject here? Because it's an interesting analogy, but I don't know if I agree that that's an appropriate analogy for recruiting, because if you think of getting a loan, let's say, which is more of a transaction, now obviously there's risk on behalf of the bank. So it is an important decision. They need to be confident that they know which criteria are relevant in order to approve or disqualify you from getting a loan. But whether or not you like are going to fit the culture and the values, whether or not you're going to be a net positive to the team, whether you have potential to not just do the job today, but to grow into a potential leader for that organization in the future. Those sorts of questions are irrelevant when it comes to, is Johnny going to repay his loan or is he not, right? So I take your point, but I don't know if it's like playing devil's advocate. I guess one question is, I think people are happy to apply for a loan online. In fact, they prefer it, right? Because it's faster and they get an instant decision. And you painted a picture of a pretty horrible interview process, which I understand many companies, you know, do have, let's say, inefficient hiring processes. But do you think that people will want to be interviewed by AI rather than a person? I guess that's one question. And number two, surely there must be some aspects of assessing whether someone's the best fit for the role that are human.
So firstly, in all of this, the right way to do it is, I think everyone agrees this, is structured, consistent interviewing. So you have hiring criteria, you have an assessment methodology, and you apply it equally across all candidates, right? And we all agree that is the way to do it. So what you're essentially doing is you are turning that hiring decision into something that is specific with different criteria. You're right. Values fit, potentially motivation, skills, experience. You'll break it into different parts. You might weight them. You apply different, you give different folks different roles to assess those things. And you try and do that consistently. So you are trying to, if you're doing it right, trying to make it an algorithm. Notwithstanding the fact that the algorithm has many parts. And, you know, to your point, maybe the argument is, maybe there's more complexity. I still argue there's less complexity in that than there is making a decision over who to give $1 million to. But to come back to your question, Mark, or the two questions, if you think about the willingness to do it, I tell a story of the first time I bought the Apple AirPods. So I'm wearing, you know, wireless Bluetooth earphones for recording this. And the first time I ever bought a pair was in early 2018. And they launched for Christmas 2017, Apple launched the AirPods. And obviously, up till then, every one of us had wires down the side of our face. And, you know, I'm a big Apple fanboy. I'll be the first to admit it. And so I went out and got these AirPods. And I go to the airport and I'm queuing in the fast lane for, you know, handing over my boarding pass. And I hand my boarding pass to the woman who's scanning it. And it's quite, you know, there's nobody in front of me, nobody around. And this is maybe a very Irish story, but she turns to me in a thick Dublin accent and she goes, "Come here, what are those in your ears?" And I said, oh, these are the new Apple AirPods. She goes, "What are they?" I says, "Well, earphones, but they're Bluetooth. They have no wires. So you can hear your music and have a phone call. And it basically, you don't even need wires. It's amazing." She goes, "Yeah, but you look kind of stupid, don't you?" And she hands my phone back and she goes, "Have a great flight." And if you know Irish culture, she wasn't trying to get a joke. She wasn't trying to embarrass me. She was being honest. I looked stupid. Because back in 2018, you were kind of odd, right? And so there's early adopters who went, "I'm going to embrace the technology, even though I look kind of stupid." And there's folks who are like, "Oh, I could never. It just looks really weird. What they're hanging out of your ears. It's just unusual." Today, 7 years later, every one of us has wireless AirPods. Some of us have sunglasses that are our phone and earphones. And so when I think about that, because I had the same question, Mark, as you, will people want to be interviewed by AI? Because today, I don't want to be interviewed by AI. But a lot of people didn't want to wear wireless earbuds the first month they came out. But over time, as more people wear them / do this, it becomes more socially acceptable. You start to see it perhaps in different, so for example, we're seeing it today in retail high volume hiring. We're seeing it in call center hiring. And we keep saying, "But not my job, but not my job." But you see that, I expect there to be creep over the years until there's a tipping point. Gladwell talks about tipping points, and he talks about this magic number, I think, of 30%, where if 30% of roles are being interviewed by AI, we hit a tipping point where it's just inevitable for everything else to happen. So I don't know how long it's going to take to get there, Mark, but I'm increasingly confident we'll get to a tipping point and it will become acceptable, even though today it's not.
Well, Malcolm Gladwell is one of my favorite authors, and it's a good example with the Bluetooth, like the adoption of anything new, right? I guess part of me still feels, like if I'm going to accept a job, I want to interview the people I'm going to be working with. Like, are these people who I respect, who I feel aligned with, who I think I can learn from? And so sooner or later, you know, during that interview process, I want to talk to the person who I'm going to be spending, you know, a huge amount of time with. Even if they're both remote, my fortunes are tied, linked to this person. Is this a person that I want to hitch my wagon to and move forward together? And then on the flip side of that, Surely half the interview is assessing the candidate, and then the other half is selling the opportunity to that person, right? So that the people who we want to offer the job to are also equally motivated to join our organization. Can you see a future where AI is as good at selling an opportunity to the specific goals, desires, and motivators of that particular individual?
It's funny. I had my good friend Glenn Cathy on the podcast a couple of months ago. And at the time, this was back in midway through 2025, he pointed to research that perhaps was a bit dubiously performed, but very accurate, where researchers basically put an AI bot, they let it wild on Reddit. And basically, no one knew it was an AI bot. It looked like a normal user on Reddit in just different forms. And it was able to persuade people to do things or change their minds at a 10x factor to a normal human. So they didn't know it was AI, and they only revealed it later. So maybe there's some ethics around that. But the scale was what stood up to scrutiny. And it was a university in the UK who basically did this experiment. I can't remember the exact university, but they were able to prove that at persuasion and negotiation, AI was better than humans, right? Certainly in this controlled environment. And that's not to say it's better in every environment, but it's pretty darn smart, right? And we just got ChatGPT-5 launched and everything else. But its ability to do all of these things is not the point. I think, can AI recruit better than the human today? 100%. Better than humans on average. I really believe that. Is that the future we want? And that will that be the case? That's a different question. And tying back to the role of the recruiter, Mark, I think there will always be a role for a human advising the business on their hiring challenges. You'll always want to have a go-to person to get some advice, to get some perspective, to bounce some ideas off, to consult with. As a hiring manager in a business or a business leader, you'll want a human. That's my go-to person. I ring Mark when I need to talk through these things or plan or when there's a problem in my hiring process. So that angle will always exist. And on the candidate side, a lot of candidates will be fine with AI, but there'll be a point where you go, oh, I want to talk to someone I can trust. And maybe it's, if I'm a product manager in London, who's the expert on product management hiring in London? And I ring her and I pay money perhaps, and she consults with me or whatever that might be. So I think human nature will always will tend towards needs for those kinds of folks. So when you talk about recruiters, in the future, I said there'll be a 50% drop. I think you'll still have candidate experts. Maybe they're today's sorcerers, Mark, right? Where they have a deep understanding of the demographic and the skill set that they hire for. They're deeply entrenched in those communities, and therefore they get a lot of trust, right? And then you'll have the folks on the business side. They're called talent advisors or talent business partners today. And they'll still need those folks. Less of them, but you'll still need them. And then there'll be a whole bunch of specialists who run TA ops systems, AI bias, and these kind of things. So there'll still be folks in recruiting. I'm talking about the transactional stuff in the middle, screening. Like, today, 99% of candidates, if not more, are screened by a recruiter. This is just looking at knockout questions. Hey, Mark, do you have the right to work? Can you work these shifts? You had the SAP experience. Which company was that? Did you finish up in April? What have you been doing? You know the questions that we ask. Literally, I think isn't a candidate in the world who wouldn't say, I'm fine with AI doing that screener with me, right? So again, it's just that's where it starts. You know, we're sitting here going, you'll never have AI interviewing. But then you concede, well, maybe screening. Well, maybe for hourly roles. Well, maybe here. And that's where, I had a friend of mine passed away, unfortunately, this summer, very tragic, who ran recruiting for UPS. And they put in AI for their hourly hiring, so warehouses and drivers. But the hiring managers were like, to one of your original points, Mark, we still need to be involved because we're better at knowing what's right. And he said, okay. And he basically was able to keep part of the hiring AI only and let the hiring managers keep in the process. And over time, prove in that split test, the hiring managers made less good decisions based on lower productivity, higher attrition, and then got the business to get rid of them. We live in a data-driven world, Mark, where organizations are looking for efficiency. So I think the data will stand up. And although people might have the whole, I want to stay involved as a human, the CFO will go, hey, we've seen the data and the data says you're not as good as the AI, so goodbye. But the legislation, as you know, Mark, still requires humans to make decisions. So again, and just human nature wants to have a locus of control. We want to feel like we still control all this stuff, even if we don't. Right. So I think that, you know, we can never underestimate that.
Okay. So I think you've convinced me that the assessment piece could conceivably be done largely by AI, potentially with the human in the process. Let's go to the bucket before that one, which, refresh my memory, what was that? Was that reaching out? Sourcing.
Let's call it candidate identification, right? So that's So sourcing, but also inbound, right? So, you know, we've never had a name for that, but let's say candidate identification. I've heard something like that. So why don't you think, or no, what would be the argument against that automation?
I think that piece, 100%, the candidate identification part, let's give it to AI today, because that's, well, I'm sure there's some people who like it, but a lot of people I know don't enjoy that part of it. But there's a bridge between the ID part and the assessment part, which is reaching out to people. Now, I think it's different in, say, hourly or if there's applicants to a job. But let's say you've got a very specialized position where there's more demand for talent than there is talent available in the market. And we need to proactively reach out to those people we've identified and persuade them to at least have a conversation and get, like, take an interest in the opportunity, right? And what I'm seeing now is more and more spam that, you know, not just candidates, but everybody is inundated with through LinkedIn, through email, and so on. And I can see AI actually becoming competent at, it's already pretty good at writing, but I can see it, like, with a few more iterations, getting very good at looking at a candidate's background, looking at their resume or their LinkedIn profile, researching that individual so we know quite a lot about them, knowing what the role is, what the, you know, benefits are, how those may match what this person could be interested in, and then crafting some highly personalized outreach that says, look, you've done this, this, and this. Would you be open to exploring an opportunity that might give you a better, you know, chance of expanding in this area or whatever, right? I can see that. But what I'm not convinced about is whether people will respond to those messages, right? Because they're almost, I think we're already reaching a saturation point where people, it's super hard. Even if I, as a human, take a lot of time and I want to craft a highly personalized message to you, Johnny, there's a good chance you're not even going to respond, right? Whereas if Johnny has a relationship with, like, he's seen as an expert in the specialist area, right? And he has developed relationships over years with candidates. He's got a great personal brand. He's very visible in his marketplace. He's speaking at conferences. He's posting on LinkedIn. He's going on podcasts. Maybe he has his own podcast. And he's really developed this brand, this reputation, and he has longstanding relationships with candidates. Now, if Johnny were to send an email or call that person, I think he'd have a much higher chance of getting the call back than the AI bot would. That's, I guess, my thesis. What are your thoughts on that?
So do you ever follow anything from Andreessen Horowitz, A16Z, Ben Horowitz, Mark Andreessen?
No.
So Mark Andreessen, wouldn't agree with his politics, but very smart guy, and they've one of the biggest VC firms in the world. Mark Andreessen has this concept in investment, and when he looks at a sector, he says most sectors that he analyzes eventually turn into what he calls a barbell or dumbbell model. Dumbbell being, you've got this bar in the middle, and then you've got two big discs at the end, right? And he said it's that, so he takes e-commerce. E-commerce is all about either cheap and super efficient, like Amazon, that's one end of the barbell, or it's looks, where you go into a looks brand store, you have to queue up behind a velvet rope, brought in one by one at a time, brought around by a personal service person, and you pay massive margins. And his argument is, you know, it evolves that there's no room in the middle for anything else. You either are one extreme or the other. And I think with regard to candidate engagement, I think it's helpful to think of this same idea. You'll have on one end of the barbell, extreme automation, you know, AI doing all the outreach messaging. On the other end, you've got Mark Zuckerberg phoning you directly, which has been reported about in the last couple of months.
$250 million to join his company. Yeah.
And this is where I think, you know, again, maybe we live in a world where we have to have polarized arguments. It's not about it's all AI or it's all human. People go, I want it to be all human. I want it to be all AI. It's, no. What's the right mix? And then when is all AI good? When is all human good? And when is there room for a mix? And then maybe the address and argument is there's never room for a mix. You just pick one or the other. It reminds me of, I was in a session before Christmas with a senior recruiting leader in Adobe. And she was sharing that they had a candidate they were reaching out to try and make an offer to a PhD grad that they were making a huge offer to. And it required comp approval above their level. It took a while. And so they finally got the comp approval, went back to the candidate. And they got gazumped or whatever the day before, because Elon Musk called the candidate directly to offer him a job. And they're like, ah. And you see this CEOs and C-level folks, and apparently Zuckerberg's been doing this for years, right? He's always been willing to jump in. So I think you'll see more, let's call it a hiring manager enablement, where to your point, if you think about the dimensions of an outreach, the quality of the message is one thing. That's 1D. I think AI is as good as it needs to be there, right? But it still doesn't get heard. There could be a 2D, could be what time do you do the engagement? What day of the week? Because maybe that has a different influence. Third might be who sends it.
Right. I think that's so huge. I guess that's my point was
you.
Who, like if, when you're going through your email inbox every day and you're trying to get rid of stuff and delete things as much as possible, you've really only got a couple things to go on. You've got the subject line and then you've got the sender, right? And people agonize over subject lines to try and like get people to open. But the reality is, the sender is even more important than the subject line.
Mark, do you do much business in India or work with recruiters in India?
I have a team member in India, but and I'm sure we have listeners in India, but no, I don't.
It's amazing. It's great to get out of your comfort zone. And I got out of my comfort zone in January. I was in Bangalore at a recruiting conference with a good friend who invited me over there. And I spent a day immersed with recruiters from India. And I hadn't been in India since before the pandemic. And everybody I met with who wanted to follow me was saying, let's connect on WhatsApp. I was like, and I love WhatsApp. What's with the WhatsApp? They're like, oh, Johnny, no one emails here anymore. I said, like, anyone? Like, oh no, candidates? What if you're doing a candidate outreach? We WhatsApp. What if you want to send a resume to a client? We WhatsApp it. I was like, you serious? He goes, oh yeah, the trust on email is gone. Here in India, we use WhatsApp. And WhatsApp, you see the photograph, you see a bio. There's so much in WhatsApp, just in the network and the way that they set it up. So subject lines are gone. It's this, you know, WhatsApp number, the photograph. If they're connected to someone you know, it suggests a name. All these little small things that make it less of a stranger. I thought it was super interesting because I remember having a similar experience with WeChat 10 years ago in China and seeing how recruiters were using WeChat in China, which is fundamentally different to how we were using social networks back in Europe or the US. And so, and it's not to say that WhatsApp or WeChat is the way to go. It's just that there's different ways. And we go through these phases where one thing doesn't work anymore. And we move to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. So if you can imagine AI, we think about AI and recruiting. AI enabling hiring managers to on scale do outreach to hard to find candidates. The AI still finds the person, identifies them, writes the message, but then tees it up to go, are you okay to send this to these 20 people? But it's the hiring manager, or maybe it's the hiring manager's boss and their profile on which networks that they're on is the most likely going to get their attention. Is it a Facebook message? Is it an Instagram message? Is it a Snap message, et cetera, et cetera? That's where AI can go next in terms of figuring out the other dimensions of outreach.
That's cool, actually. I hadn't thought of that. That, of course, AI could be able to predict which platform you're more likely to get a response to. That makes total sense. So we've talked about sourcing. We've talked about engagement. We've talked about assessment. And then I think your last bucket was the getting the offer accepted.
And that's where I still think there's humans in the first two areas, don't get me wrong, business side and candidate side. But it's in the final part that I think you'll still have humans influencing these things. Now, again, not for every role. We have many role examples today, McDonald's restaurants, 7-Eleven, et cetera, where the whole thing is just done. UPS, it's a 7-minute process from start apply to offer. 7 minutes with AI, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can get that process. And it works, and it's better, cheaper, better attrition, all this kind of stuff. But let's say in professional hiring, right? I think the negotiation part is still highly influenced by that human-to-human interaction. I remember you asked Mark about how to get into recruiting. The month I got my job offer in recruiting, I got a job offer to work for Canada Life, the assurance firm. And I got that job and this is a graduate experience the world over. I went to an assessment center one day. I sat down, they gave me a pen and pencil and paper. I filled out a maths assignment, handed it in, said, what's the next? They said, go home, we'll ring you. They wrote me back and said, you start Monday. And I didn't have a job, and I had no prospect of getting a job, and I didn't turn up because I was like, I've never even met someone from Canada Life. Like, I can do better than this. And I still think that sentiment exists for people to go, I get it. I'm good enough for you. You might meet my terms, but I haven't met you yet. I got to work with these people, this person, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think in that negotiation, it's high on the human touch, right? So there are people say people want humans in the hiring process. They do, but not in every part of it. They want them in critical moments. And so I think the challenge of the modern recruiting team or recruitment services team is to figure out where to put the humans. And when you put the humans, let's accentuate that. Let's make that an unbelievably brilliant stage or step in the process. And then we can only do that by stripping out the humans in the other parts, by streamlining it, making it effective, efficient, AI empowered, etc. But even in the parts where you're negotiating, let's say, with a candidate, you're going to have AI talking to you. And guess what? The candidate's going to have AI listening and giving them their perspective, right? You know, so maybe one day the AIs go to a room and just negotiate a salary.
Right.
But it's not just about that. It's about do I like these people? This theme, you know, we still think foolishly that we make rational decisions.
Yeah.
We make emotional decisions.
Of course we do.
All
yeah, yeah. Okay, really interesting. So Johnny, pretend that you still run a staffing agency today. Knowing what you know about the transformation that's happening in all dimensions of talent and hiring, what is your game plan for adapting your organization in order to be future fit and have an offering that is going to continue serve all stakeholders? So you, as the owner, your team members, your candidates, your clients.
I'll give you two examples of what you might do. So one, have you come across a company called Mercor, M-E-R-C-O-R?
Sounds familiar, but I don't know what they do.
It's one of those names that we're all hearing, and we can't remember where we heard it from. It was set up a couple of years ago, I mean 2 years ago, by three 21-year-olds. Their most recent round of investment valued them at $2 billion.
Okay, I have heard their story. Yeah.
It's insane. And they are essentially, if you think about what they offer, they're an AI recruitment agency, right? And I have a friend of mine who is working in a big firm. He was sharing one of their sister companies is trying to go after this strategy of five candidates in 5 minutes. And that's what their service offering is going to
okay,
be.
Wow.
Five qualified, available, and not perfect candidates in 5 minutes from when you basically give them the rec. And I imagine then they'll do it in 5 and 4 and 3 and 2 and 1, whatever. And I think you need to think about either a tech offering like that, where you have to be a tech platform or tech-enabled platform, or the other idea I'd pursue, which is my good friend Jeff, who runs Hudson RPO. You know, he had a great insight he shared with me. He said, a lot of firms out there want to go down this road, but they're just stuck. They can't bring in the AI technology. They can't automate. Banks, pharmaceutical companies, there's several industries that are going to take a lot longer. And his strategy is, and I've seen it because Hudson are one of the biggest users of our AI content. They train like crazy on our AI recruiter training. And they have invested in technology, as have other customers like ours. Cielo use Paradox, and one of big Paradox's biggest users, using the latest bleeding edge products. Because they're saying, these companies who are slow or can't use the AI technologies can use an outsource partner that can use it at arm's length, so to speak. And I think that's a really smart strategy to say, hey, we're AI powered. We have the tech, we have the people. You can't use it yet. Like, we still have firms that can't use ChatGPT, period. And you can go to an external agency or RPO who are unbelievably tech empowered and say, I know the efficiencies we can gain here. We can't use them yet. Could you give us these efficiencies? And as long as they can do it and it works, the arm's length nature, I think, is another way of delivering a service offering. So either your team are unbelievably tech powered and smart as heck about using AI, and that's your pitch to companies who can't do that yet, or you become a tech provider and use it, do it yourself. So that's what I would be doing if I was in that position.
Interesting. Yeah, it's funny. I don't think I shared this with you before. I worked for Hudson briefly because they took over. I worked for a Scottish recruitment company called Melville Craig, and they were purchased by TMP, which then became Hudson. That's an interesting model as well, as, you know, essentially having that tech AI enabled offering and your, So the hiring company outsources that part to you and you just do it for them, ideally on an RPO basis, right? So they're paying you every month. And that makes sense. Okay, super interesting. So what else are you talking to your customers about? Like, what are the biggest questions and or challenges that your customers are experiencing that they're asking for your advice on at the moment, Johnny?
So the tech stack you'll need in the future is a big challenge because, you know, as you know, Mark, at the moment, there's two big themes. How do you cut costs in recruiting? And how do you build a future-proof AI-powered recruiting model? And you got to do both at the same time. And when it comes to the tech stack, traditionally people go, well, what sourcing tools do we use? Let's look at the vendors and buy new ones. What's our ATS or CRM? Let's just swap it out. What interviewing tools do we use? You know, what assessment tools? Oh, we use SHL. Let's find another competitor and get it cheaper or whatever. But the challenge with AI-powered tools is you find a vendor that solves for problem A. But as you explore the usage of it, you find out it can do C and D as well, which were never connected or adjacent even products in the past. But all of a sudden, you realize that the data is similar and they can just spin up different offerings. And so people are kind of going, this is exciting, but I don't know what to buy because if I buy this, will I still need that in 2 years? Will my other vendors have that offering? And so there's a bit of paralysis around planning, just kind of what does the optimal tech stack look like? Because it isn't a straight replacement. So that's a bit of a challenge. There's org design, you know, back to your point.
Can I just pause you on that one? So what's your advice? And when companies are saying like, there's more and more tech coming out every day. There's new tech platforms. A lot of them have overlapping functionality. And, you know, so like, we don't even know which one we should go for because there's like five options and they're all slightly different enough that there's not a clear, you know, winner. What's the answer?
I heard a great answer to this from the VP of TA from LinkedIn at a conference back in June. And she said in LinkedIn, they use the framework Jobs to be Done. A lot of people use, and a lot of big companies, I've used it myself, to kind of work through problems. And she said they were taking a jobs to be done approach to their tech stack and AI usage in the recruiting team, and it wasn't getting them anywhere. And so they realized they needed to scrap it and move to a problems to be solved approach, which is, again, looking at the hiring workflow or experience for candidate or hiring manager, whatever, and looking at what is the problem to be solved here. And then looking at the optimal solution around that, rather than jobs to be done seems to be a more straight replacement of something. So one, it's the framework that you might use will help. But the reality is we don't really know where this will go. And so you're seeing a movement away from very long enterprise contracts with vendors. because there's kind of like, let's just see how it goes. Let's make it. And in the AI space, the vendors are moving more towards utility charging. So you charge for usage, not a 3-year contract or a 5-year contract. Yeah. So it's more like, if you use our tool, you pay this money. If you stop using it or it winds down, then your commitment goes down. So I think that's it's very disrupting to that whole
like a meter
tech space.
Yeah. So we use a tool called Clay.com, which is a really cool platform. And exactly. You do pay a monthly subscription, but you're also paying for usage.
But the thing is, a lot of companies don't like paying for usage. You might see, like, I used to think everyone would love paying for usage, but big enterprises, big companies love to plan and budget and know exactly what they're going to spend every year. Usage has downsides because what if you use it too much?
But at the same time, you kind of have to, because most of these platforms are going to have an API to ChatGPT or Claude or whatever other LLM, and they're charging metered, like, per usage. So the platform has to, either you have to connect your own or they have to charge for that.
But a topic related, Mark, another big issue is around just the bias. Like, the, you know, we spent 4 or 5 years very focused on DEI around the world. And obviously that changed a bit in the US at the beginning of 25. But you think about those efforts, that was all about how do you remove the bias from humans? But the more AI takes a role in hiring, it's not the bias in the humans, it's the bias in the machine. I'll tell you something interesting, Mark. I think it's funny, but scary. I was with our chief product officer last week, and we're talking about the AI we're deploying in our new tools. We have AI simulations for learning, and we have a new interview intelligence product we're launching. And so we have a lot of AI usage. When you have AI trying to do something, and you might have, I'm sure you've experimented with this, Mark, you might say, do X, Y, Z, and don't do A, B. And it does A, B. You're like, oh God, like a mind of its own. I was like, how do you stop that? And she said, we threaten it. I said, what? And she goes, we threaten it with jail time and fines. And it works.
That's hilarious.
So we are using tech and putting it all over our businesses and processes, Mark, that responds to threats of jail time and fines when it's not even human. And that's how most of us are making this stuff work. It's funny, but it's kind of scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, that is incredible. So you said one of the questions is around like tech stack. What was the second one before I interrupted you?
Sorry, I was saying about AI bias and trying to mitigate against that AI bias, and then the keeping the human in the loop part of it and just the challenges there.
Okay, so regarding the bias, have we solved that yet, or is that an ongoing issue as far as AI being able to remove bias?
I was in Florida in June, and I was with the leadership team of recruiting leadership team in KPMG. I was taking a group photograph outside there. They own a hotel there, and on the promenade, we took a group photograph of all the heads of TA from around the world. I had the pleasure of spending some time with them. We took a photo, and I had this fun thing, Mark, I was using with my kids, where you upload a photograph and I had a little GPT that would Pixar it, turn it into a Pixar character. So I was doing it for my mother and my family, the kids, a week before. I said, I'll do it on this photograph. And so I Pixar'd it and showed the group. Like, that's very funny. And my friend Paul, who runs TA for Canada, said, huh. He goes, I'm not there. I said, what? I looked back and sure enough, he wasn't there. He was the only black guy of the group. And AI just removed him.
Wow.
I was like, the heck? So I was furious. So hang on, let's solve this, Paul. So I spoke into the AI. I said, there's a guy there who's black and you didn't include him. What the hell? And it came back, I'm very sorry. I made a mistake. I'll put him back in. So it redid the image and I put him back in. And then there's a second black guy. Well, what the heck? And so we had another colleague, Paul, and Paul's from Asia. And obviously, the algorithm went, well, he's not European and standard white, so we'll make him black too. But the feedback I got was, this is not uncommon. See, I'm a white guy, so I don't have these problems in the world. The world's built by software developers like me and you, Mark, right? And it's wonderful to step into someone else's shoes, and they're going, that bias is still there in a photograph in the most powerful AI model in the world. And it just made me stop and go, we're not done yet. Like, there's still a whole heap of bias that's got to be fixed out of these tools.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Wow. So that's interesting. And then what would be the third biggest challenge that your clients are trying to solve right now?
It's got nothing to do with AI and everything to do with AI, Mark. It's if you accept at whatever degree that recruiting is going to be disrupted and the role be changed by AI, the humans that are left, the skill set that we need, Mark, needs to evolve. Because, you know, if you have been, I remember there was a movie that Michael Keaton was in the late 1980s about a Japanese car company that sets up in America. And he was an automotive worker and they were bringing machines in. It was about the cultural, you know, disconnect of Japanese, you know, robots in factories and the change. And it was, you know, a nice 1988 comedy with Michael Keaton. And it reminds me of where we're at today, where you have this new innovation that's going to require very different skills and there's resistance. Because if you take the automotive industry, that was heavily manual. Now it's heavily robotic. The humans still work in it, but they have to manage robots and work robots, which is very different than having, you know, a spanner or a wrench. I'm not a mechanic, obviously, Mark, in your hand, right?
Yeah.
But the recruiters are the same. If you free up all this time and your job becomes, let's say you take the example you pointed out earlier on, where you're going to still need recruiters dealing with the business and candidates, you're going to have to be much better at that. Your negotiation skills, your business partnering, your understanding of the business of strategy, converting that into a talent strategy, wider talent issues as well. And so that's the third big thing that we talk to folks about, which is how are we upskilling the recruiters that we're going to retain in our teams? Even in staffing agencies, this and RPOs moving to this advisory model, that our recruiters aren't transactional. They don't go source candidates and contact them and schedule your interviews. They turn up and advise you on how to hire, what skills to change, what markets to hire in, changing your salaries. They're strategic in that way. And then they stay with you through that whole process, how to run your campaign, what tools to use, et cetera, how to run a good process. They're skills that we haven't had, like interviewing, Mark, right? I was with a team of 200 recruiters. And we're talking about interviewing. You go, everyone knows how to interview, don't they? Because you and I worked in recruiting a long time ago. A lot of recruiters just screen. It's all they do. They don't know how to interview. So you know, I think those softer skills, they're going to play a big role in the next few years as we try and upskill and reskill recruiters.
Makes total sense. But can we get a little more specific on what those skills are so that someone could start developing them today? So obviously there's the strategic and advisory side of things. There's the, you mentioned like the negotiating side of things, but if you were to highlight three or four key skills that you think perhaps are underdeveloped among recruiters today, which are going to be like essential for those 50% of recruiters who are left in a few years' time, what would those specific skills be?
I'll give you the first example because it's most current. We get a lot of feedback saying we need to develop the business acumen of our recruiters. And you go, okay, business acumen. But actually when, you know, as a learning organization, we have to actually break that down into coursework. And when you think about it, what is business acumen? And when you ask 10 people, they'll give you 10 different answers, Mark, right? And so we had to dig deep on this because we had to actually come back with something that worked. And how we broke it down, we launched a new course called the Mini MBA for Recruiters last month. It's gone down really, really well. And what we realized is that most recruiters never went to business school. So when they go into a meeting and they're talking, you know, they're being told you're not being strategic enough. You're not bringing value and contributing to, not understanding your business needs. They're like, they never did strategy. Right. And most people who do strategy still don't know what strategy means. So how do you explain strategy to a recruiter in simple terms? How do you align that to KPIs and goals? How do you explain OKRs, different KPIs that people might use, how they attached? How do you basically walk them through financial metrics? How do you talk about P&L, balance sheet, cash flow? How do decisions impact that? How do you basically ask questions that might uncover the need? How do you then evaluate or turn a decision into financing, whether it be you're going to miss your revenue target by X because of the following calculation, or you said this is the key strategic priority. Our strategy of the company was this, our CEO stated this, so I'm going to connect the dots to this rec and make a piece, I reckon make a recommendation. You have to go through this fundamental knowledge of language of business. You don't have to turn them into an accountant or a strategist, but there is a basic understanding you'll need to have to get into those conversations, to get through your QBR within your client or your hiring manager. So business acumen will be one. If I take a second, negotiation, right? So negotiation is not just about negotiating with candidates on the job offer. It's negotiating with that hiring manager or client on their needs and requirements, time frames, decisions on which candidate to interview. So there's a lot of negotiation. Negotiation, as you know, starts well before the negotiation. I'm using air quotes here. But there's also, like, we had a customer who were challenged with the fact that their strategy was to reduce cost. And so the recruiting team are seeing that as, well, we got to do things cheaper. And we got to basically reduce headcount or whatever it might be. And if you again connect the strategy and you think about negotiation, if you can basically get better recruiters who are better negotiators at the salary level, you can reduce the median salary that gets offered for every role. If you can save $1,000, $2,000 per offer in an organization that makes 20,000 hires a year, that's much better at reducing costs than letting go 10 recruiters. So again, it's just trying to think about even how these things cross over. Like business acumen, negotiation skills. Then it could be just around, you know, financial literacy. Everything has to be a business case. You have to basically be able to do the maths. And a lot of recruiters, great recruiters, just not good at maths and Excel. But maybe you don't need that because you've got AI skills that you can use to get the AI can do the maths for you. And how do you present that back in such a way that influences somebody? So there's many of them, Mark, but they do have to be broken down and contextualized for a recruiter. Because a recruiter who goes and watches a general strategy video on YouTube is still lost. Or a business acumen video on YouTube is still lost. I think you got to make it really applicable to their engagements with candidates, clients, and hiring managers.
Definitely. Okay, so interesting. So you've mentioned business acumen and you've given a good description of what that actually means in the context of recruiting. You mentioned negotiation and in a broader sense of, then we're not just talking about negotiating an offer or negotiating a fee, but throughout the life cycle. And then the third was financial literacy, which, you know, great point. Anything else that like you're training even your team on to make sure that people are constantly upskilling and ready for the evolution of the way your business works?
AI skills, Mark, right? Being AI first in how you think. And it's I've seen it. It takes months and then you have a penny drops with somebody and they become what I would call AI first. And they have to keep reminding themselves to be AI first. Like I did a workshop during the week with a team, a leadership team in recruiting, and we used AI to simulate an exercise with a hiring manager and we practiced it. And in the simulation, I'd said, you got to go find insights and feed them back to the AI hiring manager. And that's part of the exercise. Absolutely nobody considered using AI to find their insights. They were like, well, we had to find access to LinkedIn Talent Insights and we had to go to our job board reports. I was like, any of you think of asking the AI about what is the average salary? Is it trending up, down in this city? What other cities have a lower average salary that would be easy to commute from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Because I do that and I get it in 30 seconds. And you know, even a team there who thought we're good on AI. It's like, what does good on AI mean? It doesn't mean you just write outreach messages. It's, are you literally asking it to do everything? And only if it can't do it, do you move on to a human solution for that, right? And I think that takes a long time. And it's so much more than, do you use ChatGPT to write a prompt? And so I think that's the big one at the moment. Like the soft skills I mentioned, for sure, that bucket. All of those, but also the AI literacy of the recruiters, and are you being more productive, driving more value by using these tools?
100%. And so I guess the catchphrase for me is always thinking, any task or anything I'm trying to do is, how could I use AI to do this easier, faster, better. And that almost becomes the default rather than I try and figure it out. And, oh yeah, maybe I should check AI as well. I'm fortunate that my team are perhaps even better, more AI literate than I am. So they're all discovering, testing, trying different things. And then we're teaching each other and kind of, you know, showing our work so that we can all improve together. But apart from that, anything else that, like when you say, you know, AI literate, what else are you doing internally to make sure that everybody is a ninja at this?
So it starts with access. So we give everybody access to all the tools, not just one tool. And this is a challenge for a lot of companies. It's like, you can only use Copilot or you can only use Gemini, et cetera. It's going, play around. And if someone finds a new tool and they need a new license, we'll support it financially and we'll allow them to use it. We decided to internally, we highlight values every month within our team. And we decided to bring in AI usage as a value that we'd highlight. We do an all hands every Wednesday, and we decided that every all hands every week, we take 10 minutes for anyone in the business to demonstrate how they've used AI.
Love that.
So it's kind of what you're doing there. We said, let's showcase it. Let's show that it's as important. And when, you know, and it takes a bit of work some weeks because there isn't a new example. And you go, we've got to go ring people. Who's got an example? What are you using it for? And we have to kind of nudge them to join that all hands and share it. But it's all these things. It's kind of, to your point, showing each other what everyone's doing. It's connecting it to rewards and recognition in our business, that it's going to be something you're rewarded from. We do an employee of the month thing, and it's very corny, but we try to make it heavy on AI usage so that we're deliberately choosing AI usage as a priority aspect of that. So you know, it's the resources, it's shining a spotlight, it's making sure that we're keeping the repetition about it. It's not one thing, Mark. It's trying to make sure that everyone in the business is using it. And it's the storytelling, constant storytelling about how someone used AI, and then trying to give people the encouragement, and then showing that we'll mainly single out folks who are using AI and not other things.
Love it. Johnny, this has been mind-blowing. Really enjoyed catching up with you today. If people want to follow up with you and learn more about everything that you're doing at Social Talent, where would you direct them?
Well, please, you know, send me a message on LinkedIn. Reach out to me on any preferred social network that you want. Instagram is my other favorite. Email me, johnny@socialtalent.com, or go to the website. We actually have an AI Johnny. If you click the chatbot, it's me, my voice, my personality, and all my knowledge and the company's knowledge in an AI chatbot. And you can engage with us and ask us any question about the business, about my philosophy on recruiting, every blog I've ever written, every podcast I've ever broadcast, and it has all that knowledge in it. So that's another way. I'd love folks maybe try that one and then give me your feedback in the human to human way of how did you find it?
Love that. I'll be checking that out myself. That sounds really cool. Johnny, this was fun. Have a great weekend, and thanks again.
Great fun. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button, and I'll see you next time.